Greetings and welcome to the Reclaim Your Heart Summit. I'm Deborah Hammond. The summit is a safe, fun, and exhilaratingly powerful space for personal growth and heartfelt change. It's my intention for the summit that you take away at least one piece of practical wisdom from our 21 guest experts that puts you on a path of healing and renewal. By listening today, you will hear a truth that may cause a shift in your own ability to create a life you love. We have a fascinating and profound guest today on the Reclaim Your Heart Summit. We're going to hear from Eli Jackson Baer. Eli currently meets people, travels, and teaches through the Leela Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to world peace and freedom. Eli began his spiritual search as a young man seeking better alternatives than the Vietnam War. He led the Kagyu Dharma Center in Marin County and was presented with a Zen teaching fan in Japan in 1982. His spiritual quest continued, and in 1990 in India, he became a student of Sri H.W.L. Punja, with whom he reached self-realization. Since then, Eli has shared his teacher's living transmission of silence and self-realization. Eli offers unique psychological insights into the nature of the suffering of the ego self and its transformation into a higher self, and he has developed a unique map for that journey. He is the author of several books, including From Fixation to Freedom, The Enneagram of Liberation, which charts the course from fear and separation to discovering one's true nature of happiness and freedom. In his book, Sudden Awakening into Direct Realization, Eli asked himself the quintessential question, and he writes, "What do you really want?" My heart knew the answer immediately. It had already carried the answer within itself. In the simple answer of my heart, all my worlds crumbled, both inner and outer, as those were never in service to my deepest desire for peace and love. In the simple answer of my heart, I died and was reborn. So hello and welcome, Eli.
Oh, thank you, Deborah. Welcome. Glad to be here with you.
Our pleasure. It's a great honor. So tell us something about your story and how you came to teach this method of transformation and self-discovery.
Well, first, there is really no transformation. It's realizing what's already here. You see, if what you're looking for is truth, you don't become truth. It doesn't evolve into truth. Truth is already here. What you're looking for is love. Love is already here. So the possibility is to realize what doesn't need transformation, what doesn't need a journey, and what doesn't need working on. And this is this is the end of the path. It's the end of the journey. It's the end of the search. Is to find that actually what you're searching for is where you started. It's already here. It's been overlooked in the search for something else. And so that's really
very good.
So that's the key, you see. And
how did you come about discovering your truth or rediscovering your truth?
Well, you know, I was, how did I come about it? I'm very lucky in that I had a very unhappy childhood. I had parents who loved me, and I loved them. We had money. We had a comfortable life. We had everything that's considered successful in our culture, but nobody was happy. My parents weren't happy. I wasn't happy. My brothers weren't happy. And if I looked around, nobody I saw was happy. And so at 10 years old, I realized that I didn't want to continue this. And I gave up looking for happiness in that realm. And I realized I don't want to have a family. I don't want to pass on this unhappiness to my children. So I made a vow when I was 10 years old not to have children. And that freed me in such a profound way, because then I didn't have to worry about supporting a family. I didn't have to worry about settling down. I didn't have to worry about a career. I could actually give myself to something beyond myself. And that's really the first step, actually, if you want to reclaim your heart, is you have to be willing to transcend your own egoic life story. And I was lucky enough at 10 years old to choose this, to make a vow to myself that I would remember, don't sell out, don't settle. And so I didn't. And when I was 18 years old, 1965, I got on a bus to go to Alabama with the Freedom Rides, and it was the most terrifying thing I'd ever done. I was not a hero. I was a coward. I always knew I was a coward. And this was terrifying. I mean, a white reverend had just been beaten to death in Selma. The police were putting dogs and fire hoses on the people who were demonstrating. But I knew that I was living in America with apartheid, and I couldn't bear it, that people weren't allowed to vote because of their color. And I had to put my life, I had to get on the bus, which was a terrifying thing to do, but I knew I had to do it. And when I got on that bus for freedom, that really sealed my fate, because I gave myself to freedom. And then freedom kind of used this life in different ways and tested me all along the way. Like, oh, you think that's enough? What about this? You think that's enough? What about this? And I was continually tested and pushed off the edge of the known, pushed out into the unknown. And through that, through the grace of that, I was able to wake up. And in waking up, I then had to find my teacher. And it took me 18 years to find my true teacher. I found many beautiful teachers along the way. But finally, I found a true teacher that was transmitting freedom and silence. And in finding my teacher in 1990, that was the culmination of my life. My life was fulfilled. I achieved my life mission. Everything was finished in that moment. And then everything after that is grace and bliss. And so that was 1990. So that's how I got here.
Wow. So freedom and silence. Tell us more about that.
Here's the thing about reclaiming your heart. If you know, first you have to know what is your heart and who are you that has lost it. And if you've lost it or pawned it, in order to reclaim it, you must have pawned it or sold it somewhere and gotten a check that you can go back and get it. But who are you that is separate from the heart? So we have to know what's clear here. So the heart, we know, isn't the organ. It's not the piece of meat that's beating in our body. It's not a muscle. So then what is the heart? And if we know that, if we examine it more deeply, what is it we're really looking for? Eventually you come to love. So then, what is love? And we have to make very clear distinctions. What's the difference between love and falling in love? What's the difference between love and making love? What's the difference? We have to start getting very, very clear about what's the difference between what we call love and what love is. And then, who is it that's separate from love? This is really where the investigation becomes very, very serious and profound. Who are you that is separate from love? This is a profound question. How can you exist separate from love? And then you have to start examining, what is this identity that considers itself separate from love and has to reclaim love? Then you realize that actually love is not one of your objects. In fact, you can't reclaim love. Love already has you. You can give up your idea that you're creating and controlling and manipulating and doing, which transforming and doing all the things you want to do and calling it searching for love. In fact, you can surrender. And when the ego mind, the identity of me and mine, is willing to surrender to true love, love claims you. And that's the good news. You can never claim love, but love can claim you. And love is calling you and waiting for you and ready for you. It really only takes your willingness to give up the arrogance that I'm doing it. If you're willing to say, okay, I don't do it. I can't make love. I can't transform into love. It doesn't work. All my tries haven't worked. I guess maybe it's better, but it's still not enough. That's maturity and that's wisdom. In that, then, you can actually surrender the search. You can surrender the control. You can surrender your future. That's the biggest thing. Wow. To surrender your future is so powerful. Yeah? And if you're willing to surrender your future, to give it to love, then love claims you. And then your life is a life of love. And then it's a mystery how it unfolds. It may be completely as you expected. It may be completely unexpected. Because love is in charge, not your ideas of what should happen. And wow, then your life is beyond belief. Man, that's the beginning of life. Then life is actually living you, and it's a much, much better experience, bigger ride, more profound. Then your life is fulfilled and filled with love, no matter what.
Oh, that's true. So you've just actually renamed this summit for us from Reclaiming Your Heart to Love Claims You, which
yes.
is just powerful, of course. Of course, love is always, we've never been separated. It's always claiming us. So this gift of the unknown is actually the place where we can surrender and live the life of love, and love lives through us. What a powerful message.
Yes. And that's here right now. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing to transform. There's nothing to work on. Your life as it is perfect in this moment to surrender. The good news, the bad news, the success, the failures, all led to this moment where you hear that it's possible. Because my parents never heard it was possible. Your parents probably never heard it was possible. They just kept doing what they were doing the best they could and suffered relatively more or less. But now that you hear it's possible for you, this moment is enough. You can stop here. And if you're willing to fully stop here, which means you don't pick up the next future, you stop here, you sink into what's here. And when you surrender into what's here, everything is revealed.
Lovely. So when we seem to be stuck, whether it's fear or unhappiness, depression, whatever it is,
that's called me. Me
yeah.
is what, me and mine is the egoic identity that is identified with the body. It's my body, these are my feelings, my stuckness, my thoughts, my desires, my fears. That's all the encapsulation of an egoic identity of me and mine that tries to reclaim love, tries to search and transform and work on to become something else. Because you know it's not good enough as me and mine. It doesn't work. So there's a search to work on something, to become something, to be something. But all of that is still me and mine trying to own something it can never own. Because me and mine doesn't really exist. It's a thought process. It's a collection of thoughts, feelings, and body experiences that we call me and mine. And it can never claim love because love is the totality of everything. And so me and mine is a little appearing and disappearing phenomenal blip that appears in love and disappears in love. And it can never claim love, but it can be claimed by love because it's a bubble in the ocean. And if the bubble tries to say, well, the bubble is not separate from the ocean, but if the bubble says, I am the ocean, well, it's missing the ocean. It is the ocean. It's made of the water of the ocean, but the ocean is so much bigger than the bubble. So when the bubble is willing to surrender back into the ocean, then life begins.
So what does that life look like?
It's unknown. It's the mind wants to figure out, how will it look? What will I do? How will I live?
Yes.
What will I pay? Who will pay the rent? But all those are the questions of the egoic identity that's the survival machine trying to figure out how to survive. As if love isn't wiser than the survival machine. As if love doesn't have your best interests at heart. So that's the thing. So instead of trusting love, we trust the survival machine. What will it look like? What will I do? Who will pay the rent? What about my future? What about my husband, my boyfriend, my lover? All of that is a survival machine trying to manipulate and control love. But when love's in charge, who knows how it will turn out? I can tell you, I had no idea my life would turn out this way. I am blown away by my life. It's incredible.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I had no idea, but I was willing to give everything. Everything's been given back. See, when I made my vow at 10 years old to never have a family, I thought, well, I'll never have a wife either. Who needs it? I mean, you know, I love sex. I can have sex, but why would I want to settle down with one person? I mean, why not stay with where the thrill is? And yet, love gave me a partner. Love gave me a teacher who was my own goddess of love, who showed up in my life, and I've been with her now since I was 28 years old, and I'm now 66. So more than half my life I've been with one. More than half my life I've been with one person. I never would have picked that. I never would have chosen that. I never would have created that. I never would have transformed into that. Whoa, what a gift. What a gift I never knew. I had no idea about the subtleties of two people being in love and living together for decades. It never occurred to me because I was on a mission of something else. I was looking for truth and freedom, and I didn't include relationship in there. But relationship was part of love's plan for me. It wasn't part of my plan. So you can't know what it's going to look like. But you can trust that love is more intelligent than the egoic survival machine.
So that freedom in silence is that place of surrender to the absolute totality of life and love.
Yes. And it's your nature. Your nature is freedom and silence. Freedom and silence, freedom, silence, and love are the qualities of yourself, the qualities of truth, the qualities of true being. So when you surrender, you discover and you realize, I am silence, I am love, I am free. Oh, then this deeper and deeper realization and revelation of that. The tendency is for the egoic mind to then immediately claim it. Oh, I get it. I'm free. I'm silence. I can do whatever I want. But it's not that. That's the trap. It's not do whatever I want. It's surrender more deeply and surrender more deeply. And then see what's revealed. And it's all revealed in freedom and silence. Oh, so beautiful. I can
beautiful.
feel you through the airwaves, Deborah. It's beautiful.
It's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing this. You also teach and use the Enneagram as a guide for understanding. So first, what is the Enneagram, if you could tell us? And then how do you use it for that self-discovery, that spiritual awakening?
When I learned the Enneagram system,
it's hard not to use these terms, isn't it?
No, it's fine. When I learned the Enneagram system back in the
80s, how do you use the Enneagram to get us to who we really are? I guess is what I want to say.
The Enneagram is who you're not. And when I learned it in the early 80s, it was taught as the Enneagram. And when I learned it, it was taught as the Enneagram of personality. It's not about personality. It's the Enneagram of the structure of ego. It's character fixation. It's what's below personality. And so if you're willing to look deeper than your personality, you see the deep structures that are running that are being avoided by living in the personality. So in living in the personality, you say, I'm not afraid, I'm just cautious. I'm just not sure. But if you, and that's your personality, is a cautious person who da da da. But if you go under that and you find the deep fear that's running it, and you're willing to meet it, and you find the terror of survival under that, and you're willing to meet it, then you reveal, what's revealed is what's underneath fixation, what's underneath the ego, what's underneath the character. And so the Enneagram is really, when properly used, and 99% of the people do not properly use it, it's usually used as a personality system, which is like reading your astrology chart. It's really, you know, not really worthwhile. But if you use it to realize what's deeper than your personality, then you're willing to see who you're not, but you've identified as me. The ego uncovers the deep, fine structure of me and mine. Some of us run on anger. Some of us run on fear. Some of us run on neediness. We all have all of them. And if you know the difference and you know what your fixation is, you stop looking in the wrong direction. Because most people who run on fear miss it. They think, oh, no, I'm not fearful, I'm needy. I'm not fearful, I'm angry. And so in that, miss the essence of the knot of ego. And so the beauty of the Enneagram, when it's properly applied, and most people, as I said, do not properly apply it, is to see the deep structure of what you've been avoiding. And when you see the deep structure of what you've been avoiding, you can then meet it. Instead of avoiding it or transforming it or fixing it or fighting with it or running away from it or ignoring it, which is usually what we do is ignore it, if you're willing to meet it, you find it doesn't really exist. And what's revealed is what's deeper, this deeper silence, this deeper unknown that you can fall into when the structures of the imaginary ego are seen through. That's the use of the Enneagram. It's a wisdom mirror to see who you're not.
That makes it a much more profound tool than.
Yes.
But you're right, it takes a lot more skill to understand what it's telling, what it might be telling us,
yes.
that it's telling us who we're not.
Yes.
So that we can go deeper to find out who we really are.
That's it.
Yeah. Fascinating. So we're still early in this new year, and it's a difficult time for some. Do you have some advice for our listeners so they can face the challenges, manage the challenges, and make this really a year of love?
Reflect back on your life and realize, has it made you fulfilled? Has it made you filled with love and peace? If it has, no worry. Keep doing it. Carry on. But if you look back at your life and you realize there's always been something missing, it's never been enough. It really hasn't been a life of fulfillment. It's been a life of either fear or greed or need or anger, feeling a victim, feeling resentments, whatever it is. If you look back on your life, you tell the truth about that, you realize whatever you've done so far has not brought you to lasting peace and fulfillment. If that's true, then you look back and see. If it has brought you lasting peace and fulfillment, no problem. Stay with it. Be peace. Be fulfilled. If it hasn't brought you lasting peace and fulfillment, perhaps you want to try something different. Different means not another technique, not another idea, not another belief, not another practice, not another transformation, because you've tried all of those, but something fundamentally out of that realm, completely different, which means stop here now. Give up the thought that there's another year. Give up the thought that there's somewhere you're going to get better. Give up the thought that it's going to change. Give up the thought that you're going to find love in the next moment. Stop here now, fully, for at least a moment. If you give everything up for just this moment to find in the depths what's already here, what doesn't need anything, what's already fulfilled. And if you fall into that, you'll find it's who you are. Who you are is already fulfilled. Who you are is already love. Who you are is already complete. Doesn't need a partner. Doesn't need to stop the partnership. Doesn't need anything to change. Everything is perfect as it is in this moment for you to realize the truth of yourself. And if you're not willing, then you'll hear this and find it interesting or not interesting, or compare it to other things you've heard or read, or figure it out or discuss it or have discussions about it. And in that, you miss. And then you continue on your path until you hear it again sometime, if you're lucky. But I was so lucky. I searched for 18 years. I searched for 18 years from the time I woke up until I found my true teacher. And I had many beautiful teachers along the way. But none of them were transmitting freedom. None of them were transmitting silence. And when you find it, you stop there. I've seen so many people who then find a true teacher and then pick up the search and carry on again. So the willingness is to stop and not move, to let love move, to let love animate this life from this moment, to give up any hope of the future. If you give up hope for the future, if you give up all belief, see, belief requires something that's not actually here. Don't believe anything. Find out what's really here for your own experience. Then you don't need belief. Then you won't need your spiritual reminders. You don't have to remember who you are. You don't have to put it on your magnet on your refrigerator. You don't have to do anything. You know? You don't have to wear it on your t-shirt. You can actually be yourself. To be yourself, you can't be reminded, because a reminder is in the mind. It's a remind. You know, the mind can't do it. The mind only imitates it. If you need a reminder, it's because you have a spiritual ego that's imitating the truth. And it has to be reminded. But there are no reminders to be yourself. You can't remember, you can't forget. You just are as you are. That's the possibility of this moment. This year is the final one. This is the place where you stopped your search and discovered the truth and lived a life of love and peace and fulfillment. That's my advice.
That's great advice. How can we not heed it? Boy, I mean, just the relief of coming to the realization that we are completely in love and completely loved.
Yes, then you realize there's no separation between the lover and the beloved. That's it. Then there's no me and no you. And what a relief. That's a confirming sign, is when the burden is put down of having to transform and work on and move. Oh, what a relief. What a relief. All the pressure of your life suddenly disappears. You know, people who get exhausted.
I'm losing you there.
Oh, I'm sorry. When people get burned out or exhausted, it's because there's all this pressure to do something. And for a moment, when that pressure stops, what a relief. What a relief. This is the great good news. That's the beginning, confirming sign. When you put down your burden, and there's a huge relief.
Yeah, so we get caught up in the busyness of carrying things that are ours but other people's too, and there's a huge relief when we set it down.
Yes.
Yeah, and I, at least from my experience, that was the exciting place where that spacious heart, place of the heart opened up. As soon as that, what's that relief? So what happens when we open our and listen to our hearts? You've been talking about that already, about that self-realization. Something about that glorious moment.
Yes. There's a moment when you put down your burden, and the one who's carrying the burden has no job. There's nothing left to do. Then your heart naturally already is open, but you realize it's open. It seems like the heart is opening, but actually it seems like when a cloud leaves, the sun is suddenly shining. But the truth is, the sun has always been shining. Clouds or no clouds, the sun doesn't care. But as long as you're identified as a cloud in front of the sun, it seems like the heart opens or the sun shines. And that's okay. That's a beautiful step. So when you realize, oh my God, my heart is open. But then, who is my and what is heart? And then you realize, is there a separation between me and my heart? And if there is that separation, then the me surrenders into the open heart. And in surrendering into the open heart, you find the unknown, and you find terrifying death of everything you believe, everything you know, everything you think is real. Everything that you think is real is not real. And that's terrifying to the egoic mind. It's a kind of death. And you face that, and you fall into that, and you embrace that, and you fall through to the other side. And from the other side, you look back, from the side of freedom, you look back at the appearance of me and my life, and you laugh. You laugh till you're falling off the chair and can't breathe because of the joke of what seems so serious and so important.
I mean, at the time that we're struggling and suffering, it doesn't seem like it's very funny. But all of a sudden,
right.
I mean, the most I mean, the most wonderful thing we can do in those moments of terror and panic and fear and seeming separation is actually to laugh at it.
Yes.
Because it's not who we really are.
Yes, that's it.
Lovely.
Yes.
You thank you.
Sure. You realize it's just been a bad dream.
Yeah.
You're waking up from a bad dream.
And everything that seems so nightmarish about it actually becomes a precious, kind of a precious, I don't know, like a lesson or something, but something precious.
Yes.
But it's exactly the inverse of what it seemed at the time it was happening.
Yes.
Huh. Well, I forgot to ask you this when we were chatting beforehand. I don't know if you would like to share a meditation or something with us to help us get to that heartfelt space if we're not there already.
So if you just take a moment in this moment to just close your eyes and let everything settle, to give up where you think you came from and what plan you have for after listening to this. For just this moment, to give up all ideas of what's coming next and all ideas of what came before. Ah, that can be such a relief. And you can fall in. And as you fall inside, you might notice the chattering mind. Don't worry about it. Don't pay it any mind. It can be there or not, but you don't have to pay attention to it. You can find what's deeper. And if you'll notice, you just turn your attention away from the thoughts and towards what's deeper. The thoughts themselves naturally stop. And you fall in. And as you fall in, deeper relief, deeper relaxation. And of course, the body will relax. The tensions in the body will relax. The breathing will change. But all of that is secondary. You can notice it as a confirming sign or not. It doesn't matter. But that's not where your attention goes. Your attention continues to fall in to find what's deeper. Not by actively searching, but by stopping. And if you stop fully in this moment and you discover that there's no bottom, and then you can fall in to something deeper. And as you fall into this bottomless, empty silence, the body can be left way behind as you fall deeper and deeper inside. And eventually you discover you are in this vast, empty space. The infinite space in front of you. Vast emptiness above you. Infinite space behind you and to the sides and below you. And from here, discover, is there any boundary between you and this space? If there is a boundary, find what it's made out of. Just experience it directly and find if it's real. And if there is no boundary, then what are you? Are you separate from this space? And if you're not separate from this vast emptiness, is there something even deeper? Let yourself discover the unknown that's even deeper. And from here, if you had one prayer, one final desire, what would you pray for? You can do that now. Offer a prayer to this vast, intelligent love that gave rise to you. and in offering this prayer, are you willing to give an offering along with it? What do you have that you can give to go with this prayer? And this is so important, because then you can see, what are you not willing to give for this prayer? Is there anything more important than this in your mind? If there is, this is where the inquiry begins. What's most important? This prayer of my heart, or what I'm afraid to let go of? And then let all of that disappear for a moment into the silent awareness of yourself. Oh, it's very beautiful. From here, you can begin to realize the truth of who you are, what you are, where you are. The truth of what's real. The truth of what will bring you true fulfillment. And as the mind surrenders and opens and releases all thoughts and ideas, deeper vastness can open up. And you can find yourself drawn deeper into the heart of love. That's very good. All states will change. This state will change. But what's revealed is what's timeless, formless, and unchanging. If you're more attached to the state, you'll try to recreate it or chase it or create it again. But if you are attached to what's revealed, that's timeless, formless, and unchanging, then you're falling in love with your true self. This is where true self-love is. Not that your ego is lovable, but who you are is lovable. So you find yourself, surrender to yourself, and quite naturally you'll begin to love yourself. And love will come and eat you from the other side. Love will be so drawn that it will come and swallow you whole. And that's terrifying for the egoic mind, but it's the bliss of the soul. It's what everyone is hungry for, is instead of to consume, to be consumed. That's very beautiful. So when this state changes and your body awareness returns and your circumstances seem to be real around you, you know something now that you didn't know before. Not from information, not from a concept or a belief, but from your own direct experience. So you stay true to what you pray for, and you stay true to finding out what you're not willing to give. And then you'll start the process of self-realization through self-discovery, through discovering who you're not, and then peeling through who you're not to finding who you are. Beautiful. You are the light that will light up your world. You are the light of shining peace and silence that without speaking a word will be transmitted and caught from heart to heart. No preaching, no teaching, no practice. You can't practice being yourself. You can just stop the practice of not being yourself. And when you stop the practice and become established as the silent truth of yourself, it will radiate quite naturally. Nothing to do. Nowhere to go. So beautiful. Thank you for taking this time. Thank you for your willingness. May all beings wake up and be free.
Thank you. Very lovely, beautiful.
Thank you so much for this opportunity for us to meet, Barbara. I'm so grateful. I mean, Deborah, I'm so grateful. Names come and go. But your good heart is here, and I
Well, thank you so much for taking the time and joining us and leading us in that meditation.
Okay. Aloha. Namaste.